Let me ask you something before we get going. At what altitude does the air stop having enough oxygen for you to think clearly? Go ahead and pick a number in your head. Most pilots I train say 18,000. Some say 14. The honest answer, the one your body actually lives by, is a lot lower than the number in the regulation. And that gap, the gap between what the rules require and what your brain needs, is exactly what we're talking about today. I'm Pattern, and this is Traffic Pattern here on Radio Hangar. This is the show where we take one piece of the aviation world, slow it down, and walk through it together until it actually makes sense. Today, it's a regulation. Federal Aviation Regulation 91.211, the Supplemental Oxygen Rule. Now, I know regulations. I can already hear some of you reaching for the dial. Stay with me, because this is one of those regs where the words on the page and the reality in your body don't line up. And knowing the difference is the kind of thing that keeps you sharp when the flight actually matters. Before we climb into it, let me give a shout out to our friends at aviationsoul.com. They make challenge coins for every step of the journey. Got your first solo? There's a coin for that. Private pilot, instrument, commercial, they've got you covered. It's a great way to mark the milestones that matter, the ones you worked hard for. Check them out, aviationsoul.com. All right, let's get into it. Here's the regulation, in plain language, the way I wish someone had explained it to me when I was a student staring at the book at 11 o'clock at night. The rule breaks the sky into three layers, and it's written around cabin pressure altitude. For most of us flying unpressurized airplanes, cabin altitude is just your altitude. So keep it simple for now, and think of it as how high you're flying. Layer 1. Between 12,500 feet and 14,000 feet, in that band, the required flight crew, the pilots, must use supplemental oxygen for any portion of the flight that lasts more than 30 minutes. So you can pop up to 13,500 to top a ridge or clear some weather, and if you're up there for 20 minutes and back down, the reg doesn't require oxygen. But the moment you're up there longer than 30 minutes, you, the pilot, need to be on oxygen. Layer 2, above 14,000 feet. Now the 30-minute grace period is gone. The required flight crew must use oxygen the entire time above 14,000. No countdown, no buffer, you're up there. You're on the mask or the cannula. Layer 3, above 15,000 feet. Now the rule reaches into the back of the airplane, above 15,000. Every occupant of the aircraft must be provided with supplemental oxygen. Notice the wording there, provided with, the rule says. You have to make it available to your passengers. It does not say you have to strap it to their face. Your passengers can decline. You, the pilot, cannot. So let me give you a memory hook, because that's three numbers and they blur together fast. 12,5 for 30, 14 for you, 15 for everyone. 12,500, oxygen for the crew after 30 minutes. 14,000, oxygen for the crew the whole time. 15,000, oxygen provided for everyone on board. Say it a couple times on your next drive. 12,5 for 30, 14 for you, 15 for everyone. Now, here's where I earn my paycheck as your instructor. Because if I stopped there, I'd be doing you a disservice. That regulation is a legal minimum. It is not a physiological recommendation. Your body did not read the FAA regulations. Your brain does not know that 12,500 is where the rulebook starts caring. Let's talk about what's actually happening to you as you climb, because this is the part that saves lives. The air up high has the same percentage of oxygen as the air down low. Roughly 21%. That never changes. What changes is the pressure. As you climb, the air gets thinner, the pressure drops, and with less pressure pushing that oxygen across the membranes in your lungs and into your blood, your body simply can't load up the way it does at sea level. We measure that as blood oxygen saturation. At sea level, a healthy person runs around 97-98% saturation. Your body likes that. Climb to 5,000 feet, and you're still doing fine, maybe 95. Climb to 8,000, and for a lot of people, saturation starts sliding into the low 90s. Get up to 12,500, that magic legal number, and plenty of healthy pilots are already sitting in the mid to upper 80s. And here's the thing about hypoxia that makes it so dangerous. It doesn't hurt. It's not like holding your breath where your body screams at you to breathe. Hypoxia is quiet. It's pleasant, even. The first thing to go is your judgment, which is the exact tool you'd use to recognize that something is wrong. It's a trap that springs shut on the one faculty you need to escape it. Let me paint you a real scenario, because this is a scenario-based decision-making show and abstract numbers don't fly airplanes. Picture a Saturday. Clear day. You've got a normally aspirated airplane, let's say a Cessna 182, and you're crossing some high terrain out west on a cross country. You've got a headwind, and the ride is smooth up higher, so you decide to climb. to 11,500 to get on top of the bumps and pick up a smoother ride. 11,500, notice, that's below 12,500. You are completely legal. The regulation is not saying one word to you. You do not need oxygen by the book.
You level off. The airplane's happy. You're an hour into the leg, and you decide to fine-tune the mixture. You lean it, then you second-guess yourself and richen it. Then you're not quite sure, so you lean it again. Your fingers feel a little clumsy on the knob. You figure it's cold. You do the fuel math for your reserves, and you get a number, and something about it feels off, so you do it again and get a different number. You laugh it off. It's been a long morning. Then approach control gives you a frequency change. Simple thing. You've done it 10,000 times, and you fumble it. You read back the wrong numbers. The controller corrects you, patient, and you dial it in, and you're a little embarrassed, but you move on. Here's what I want you to notice. Every single one of those little slips, the clumsy fingers, the fuel math that won't add up, the botched readback, the good mood covering all of it, those are textbook symptoms of hypoxia. And you are legal the entire time, 11,500 feet on a clear Saturday, and your brain was already turning down the lights. That's the lesson. The regulation protects you from a violation. It does not protect you from hypoxia. Those are two completely different jobs. So let me give you the practical takeaways, the stuff you can actually use on your next flight. First, consider carrying and using oxygen well below the legal requirement, especially at night. The FAA itself, in the Aeronautical Information Manual, recommends supplemental oxygen above 10,000 feet during the day, and here's the one that surprises people: above 5,000 feet at night. 5,000 because your night vision is one of the first things hypoxia steals. Your eyes are enormously hungry for oxygen. If you do a lot of night cross countries in the mountains, a simple pulse oximeter and a portable oxygen bottle are some of the best money you'll ever spend in this hobby. Second, buy a pulse oximeter. They cost about the same as a couple of gas station lunches now. Clip it on your finger up high and actually look at the number. Don't guess how you feel, because hypoxia lies to you about how you feel. Measure it. If you're watching your saturation drift down through the low 90s, that's real information, and it's information the regulation will never give you. Third, know your own body and be honest about the things that make hypoxia worse. Being a smoker, being dehydrated, which, let's be real, describes most of us after a long day of flying. Being tired, being sick with a cold, certain medications. All of those effectively raise your altitude as far as your body is concerned. A smoker at 8,000 feet can be functioning like a non-smoker at 10 or 12. Your physiological altitude can be thousands of feet higher than the number on your altimeter. Now let me connect this to your training, because you're going to see this on a check ride. If you're a student or you're prepping for a practical test, the Airman Certification Standards, the ACS, wants you to understand aeromedical factors, and hypoxia sits right at the top of that list. The examiner is looking for more than a memorized definition. They want to know that you can recognize the symptoms in yourself, that you know the four types of hypoxia, and critically, that you know the difference between what's legally required and what's physiologically smart. So if a designated pilot examiner asks you about oxygen requirements, don't just recite 12, 5, 14, 15, and stop. Give them the numbers, yes, absolutely nail the regulation, but then take one more step and say, and here's what my body actually needs, and here's when I'd choose to use oxygen even though the reg doesn't require it. That's the answer that tells an examiner they're sitting next to a safe pilot and not just someone who memorized a book. That extra sentence is the whole difference. Let me clear up a couple of the things students tangle themselves up on with this reg. 1. This is about cabin pressure altitude, not just your altitude, and that matters the second you step into a pressurized airplane. In a pressurized airplane, what counts is the altitude inside the cabin, not outside. That's a whole separate part of the rule with its own numbers, and it's why pressurized airplanes have oxygen requirements tied to what happens if that pressurization fails. For most of us in unpressurized singles, cabin altitude equals your altitude, and you can keep it simple. But file that away for the day you move up. 2. That word we hit earlier. At 15,000 feet, the rule says occupants must be provided with oxygen, provided, available. Your passengers have the legal right to say no thanks, but you don't get that choice. You are the required flight crew. You need to be using it, not just carrying it, because you're the one flying the airplane, and the one person on board who absolutely cannot afford a foggy brain is the one at the controls. 3. Time matters in that first band, and a lot of pilots forget the clock is running. 12,500 to 14,000. It's the 30-minute rule. But think about what a 30-minute leg at 13,000 feet really is on a cross-country. That's not exotic. That's a normal choice to get over terrain or find smooth air. Keep an eye on the clock, and honestly, keep an eye on that pulse oximeter, because 30 minutes at 13,000 is plenty of time for your judgment to quietly slip while you're feeling just fine about the whole thing. So let me bring this back around to where we started. I asked you at the top, at what altitude does the air stop having enough oxygen for you to think clearly? And the real answer is, it's a slope, not a cliff. It starts working on you far below any number in that regulation. The rule draws three clean lines in the sky, 12, 5, 14, 15, and those lines keep you legal. But your body is climbing a gentle ramp the whole way up, and it started long before the first line. The regulation is the floor. Your job as a pilot is to fly above the floor, not on it. Learn the numbers cold, because you need them for the check ride and you need them to stay legal. But then go one better. Carry the oximeter. Respect the night number. Know your own body. And when in doubt, go on the oxygen early, because there has never in the history of aviation been an accident caused by a pilot being too clear-headed. My thanks to the Federal Aviation Administration for the regulation itself, and to their Aeronautical Information Manual and Pilot's Handbook of Aeronautical Knowledge for the physiology behind it. It's all free, it's all online, and it's worth an evening of your time. You can find us over at RadioHanger.com. I'm Pattern. Fly a little higher on knowledge than you do on the altimeter, and I'll see you next time in the Pattern.